Pituitary World News mission and this podcast are made possible in part by a generous grant from Novartis Pharmaceuticals. Welcome to another exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News. Today, Dr. Blevins discusses the use of somatostatin analogs in acromegaly.
This is Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News, podcasting to you today from the coast of Northern California. Today's topic, as Jorge just mentioned, is the use of somatostatin analogs in the management of patients who have acromegaly. There are at least five known types of somatostatin receptors. Those that are present in growth hormone-producing cells are largely the type 2 and the 5 receptors. Somatostatin is a hormone produced by the hypothalamus that, through its action on the receptors, inhibits growth hormone production by these cells. Growth hormone-releasing hormone by the hypothalamus actually stimulates growth hormone production by these particular cells. At any rate, somatostatin is inhibitory, and fortunately, probably about half of those patients who have tumors that produce growth hormone have tumors that possess somatostatin receptors, and thus a molecular target of the acromegaly using somatostatin receptor ligands or analogs, the topic of today's discussion. Previously, I discussed the use of pasireotide, which is a somatostatin analog used in the management of Cushing's disease. Some of that information, especially about drug and pharmacokinetics, applies to this discussion, and I'll review some of that here today. But if you want to learn more, even though it's a topic about Cushing's, it might be useful because I think the two podcast presentations are complementary. Now, the history of the use of somatostatin analogs in this disease state begins back when we had subcutaneous sandostatin, which was basically an analog, if you will, or a chemically modified form of somatostatin, also known as octreotide. And I remember when this drug first came out in the early 1990s, we used to have to administer this every 6 to 8 hours by subcutaneous injection. And it worked probably in about two-thirds of patients with acromegaly selected for a response based on either their octreotide scan results or based on their response to a single subcutaneous injection. The problem was is patients had to take the drug every 6 to 8 hours, and some even had to use it by continuous infusion. And fortunately, due to advances in drug delivery, we don't have to use this form of somatostatin analog much longer. I will, however, say that it's useful in patients who have headaches in association with acromegaly, even when they're taking other somatostatin analogs that are longer acting. And one can administer 50 to 100 micrograms once a day, and it's remarkable how the headaches in patients with acromegaly seem to be resolved by this treatment. We don't think that has any direct effect on the tumor, but instead on the hypothalamic modulation and interpretation and relay of pain to the consciousness. Novartis Pharmaceuticals came out with a different drug delivery system where they made these little microspheres and put somatostatin in these microspheres that are biodegraded after injection, and they called that product sandostatin LAR, LAR standing for long-acting release. And this drug was approved in the, I believe, late 90s, around 2000 or there, so I don't remember exactly. But we've had this drug available for use in that population of those with acromegaly since that time. This is a drug that's administered every 28 days. Rarely, I've had to go to every 21 days. And it's the pharmacokinetics of the delivery system that enable one to administer the drug at monthly intervals and achieve control in pre-selected patients, anyways, 50% to two-thirds of those patients who are thought to likely be responders to treatment. This is one of those drugs where you start with a low dose and titrate up to a maximum dose of 30 to 40 milligrams monthly. basically, it takes about 3 months of treatment or three injections to sort of see the steady state and to measure the IGF-1 and decide whether you're going to go up on the dose. So if you start on the low dose, you might take 6 to 9 months before you actually see how efficacious therapy is going to be. Because of that, sometimes we start patients on a medium dose to see what's going to happen with regards to the response to treatment. This drug used to be administered in physicians' offices because if it's not reconstituted and administered incorrectly, the way the drug is formulated, it's not going to be effective. But the company now works with home health nursing agencies to send a nurse to the patient's home so that they can receive the injection at home rather than have to go to a physician's office if that's the course chosen by the particular patient. A similar drug is Somatuline Depot, which is basically generic name is lanreotide. Lanreotide was in a subcutaneous form, but they quickly put it into this auto gel that's a depot form that initially was every 14 days, but now is every 28 days, and in some patients can even go out to every 6 or 8 weeks, depending on the clinical response. This is a drug that you start with a low to medium dose and you titrate upwards or downwards as necessary based on responses. You can probably see your IGF-1 level in 6 to 8 weeks rather than taking 3.5 months between dose changes to determine whether or not you're going to have efficacy. And again, this is another somatostatin analog, so the efficacy rates are about the same, 50 to 65% in pre-selected patients, probably as low as 40 to 45% in patients who are not pre-selected for responsiveness. That would be 40% of all comers to 50% of all comers with acromegaly would respond to treatment. This drug is different from Sandostatin LER in that it is a different formulation. It requires a lower volume of injection, and it's more of a subcutaneous rather than a deep subcutaneous injection. The needle is larger. Patient preferences vary. I show patients usually both methods of administration and allow the patient to help us choose whether they want to use somatostatin analog of the Sandostatin LER nature or the Somatuline Depot. The newest drug in this class of drugs is that of pasireotide or Signifor LAR, and I've treated several patients with this drug and have had great success. It has a greater receptor affinity, and when studied head-to-head with Sandostatin LAR, Novartis makes both drugs, by the way, this drug is actually more efficacious and is more likely to control acromegaly. I think it was 70% more likely to be effective in the study that was done. And you know, generally speaking, you can get IGF-1 levels controlled within 3 months in patients who take this drug, and you can titrate the dose up or downwards as necessary, depending on clinical response. In regards to this class of drugs, I've so far talked about efficacy in response to normalization of IGF-1 levels. Growth hormone normalization is about the same, maybe a little bit less than that. If you look at the combination of growth hormone and IGF-1 normalization, it's even less, but generally they're very effective drugs. And I tell patients they have about a 50% likelihood of responding to one of these medications. When it comes to tumor reduction, the data are all over the place, but generally speaking, about 70% of patients will have some degree of tumor regression. I've seen some rather marked regression in some patients with no regression in others, but it's possible to improve visual field deficits in patients with acromegaly. It's also possible to diminish tumor size and relieve mass effects and see restoration of normal pituitary function, resolution of headaches, etc. And there's some speculation that decreasing tumor size prior to surgery might improve the overall efficacy of surgery, but there are a number of studies suggesting that it does and an equal number of studies suggesting that it does not. So it's not usually my policy to treat patients prior to surgery and attempt to try to improve the surgical response rate. The group of patients where I will treat prior to surgery are those with severe obstructive sleep apnea, because you can see marked improvements in sleep apnea and less respiratory complications of surgery and especially intubation if you pre-treat those patients. And then those who have severe acromegalic cardiomyopathy, I think it's worthwhile to try to treat them prior to surgery so that you can improve cardiac function so that they have a better outcome of surgery. Now, the side effects are about the same for all of these drugs because they're in the same class. And most of those side effects are due to the fact that somatostatin is a ubiquitous inhibitory hormone. And anytime you give an analog of that, regardless of which drug this is, you're going to inhibit other body processes. So, for example, you can have malabsorption and maldigestion due to inhibition of gut hormones and digestive enzyme production. You can see inhibition of gallbladder contractility and motility due to inhibiting cholecystokinin and end up with gallbladder sludge or gallstones. And you can inhibit insulin secretion and unmask diabetes mellitus, which, as you know, is more common in patients with acromegaly to begin with. Interestingly, the drug pasireotide is more likely to cause diabetes mellitus, or at least unmask it, if you will, than the other drugs in this particular class. I have also seen patients where glucagon is inhibited and they develop hypoglycemia, where they have to go down on their diabetes medications. Bradycardia can be seen in 2 to 5% of patients. That's a slow heart rate. And then some patients can have abnormal liver functions as a consequence of treatment. Occasionally, I see a patient that has a partial or incomplete response to somatostatin analogs, and in that setting, it's fine to continue the medication and then to add a second drug. Sometimes we'll use cabergoline, which has been a subject of a podcast, and occasionally we will use somavert or pegvisomot, which we have also had a podcast pertaining to the use of that drug in acromegaly. Generally speaking, if a patient does not respond to a somatostatin analog at all, I don't simply add a second drug and continue the somatostatin analog. If they don't respond at all, I simply discontinue the somatostatin analog and go with the single next drug that I decide to add. So I'll only continue treatment if they have a partial response to treatment, then I'll add the second drug. Sometimes, however, if a patient doesn't want to do two drugs, I'll go ahead and discontinue the somatostatin analog if there was a partial response to treatment. And I'm more likely to do that in patients who don't have giant adenomas with visual field compromise. If I get a partial response in a patient with a giant tumor and vision compromise, I'm more likely to continue the somatostatin analog in those patients. In fact, I'm more likely to refer them to surgery for debulking to save vision, and then we'll use medical therapy to sort of take hold of the acromegaly while we're waiting the effects of radiotherapy. All right, well, I hope that was informative. That's sort of a quick overview of somatostatin analogs in acromegaly. There's a lot more information on that topic, and if you're interested in more, please send us questions. Or feel free to search the net. You can look up any one of these drugs according to name and find the manufacturer's websites and find excellent patient information on the web, and probably even write the company to get that sent to your home as well. So thanks for listening. Once again, this is Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News. Have a nice evening.
Thank you for listening. Please stay tuned for more podcasts and articles at pituitaryworldnews.org.